And now, a bit of romance.
Two girls on a quest to find which rom-com is the best. P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
Hello, and welcome to P.S. I Love Rom-coms, the podcast about leaning in for a kiss, parents who are missed, and secret desires that are wished to a man in a coma. You guys, I'm Allie.
And I'm Mia. Yes, I Love Rom-Coms is a podcast where Allie and I, rom-com fangirls, do whatever it takes. You guys, we would jump in front of an oncoming train if we had to answer that all-important question, which rom-com is the best rom-com of all time?
Joining us today are some fellow rom-com experts. You guys, they are the hosts of the rom-com podcast, The Rom-Com Effect. And if they were in a rom-com, they'd be astute con artists who con two guys into taking them to their sister's Hawaiian wedding as dates, only to reveal that they're not mild-mannered women, but instead are the life of the party. You guys, it is the wonderful Lena Olson and Katie Chilson.
Oh my god, what a lovely introduction.
That I love
like a
it
lovely trip.
Oh my god,
I can't wait.
That's from the classic, and I'm using the word classic very strongly here, rom-com Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates.
Yes.
It's more modern day rom-com. Aubrey Plaza and Anna Kendrick.
Oh my gosh, very fun. Oh yeah, very fun. Mary Holland, a side character.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a good time. Oh my gosh, thank you guys so much for being on the pod. We're such fans. We're so excited to have two other experts on to get to dig into a rom-com with. And Lena and Katie, speaking of who you two might be in a rom-com, we like to start off each episode with a little segment called Which Rom-Com Heroine Are You Channeling? Where we equate the experiences we've had this week with a famous rom-com hero or heroine. Allie, would you kick us off this week?
Oh man. Yes.
I will. Okay, I didn't put you on the spot. You have one.
I'll find one. You guys, kids. Wow. I am coming into this podcast hot and emotional. I have been on the phone with Apple customer service for the last, oh god, you guys, 2 hours.
Oh,
it's
no.
Disgusting. It's so,
oh
my gosh. And it's like I feel like I'm wasting my life. I feel like I'm wasting this other person's life, like this Apple customer service person's life, where I'm like, they just kept transferring me and they kept transferring my call. So is this a rom-com that I'm going to be saying? Probably not. It's probably a children's film. But you guys, it's been one of those weeks, so I'm just going to go for it. I'm channeling oh my gosh, the character from Zootopia.
Jennifer Goodwin?
What's the rabbit's name? Judy Hopps. Oh, I'm channeling Judy Hopps. You guys, oh my god, this is so rough. Judy Hopps, where she's talking to that sloth and he's just talking so slowly and she's trying to be patient. And I think it's, you know, is this a rom-com? Maybe. Is there something going on between Judy Hopps and the fox? Maybe. I don't, you know, whatever. But you guys, this Carson, the guy who I was talking to for the last 2 hours, I mean, I feel like we... First name basis, we know probably everything about each other, and he has seen me at kind of like the, you know, probably like one of the worst anyone has ever seen me, but bless him for helping me, and that's who I'm channeling.
Oh my gosh.
Mia, who are you channeling this week?
Oh my gosh. I hope your computer is okay, is all I'll say. So sorry. Who am I channeling? Okay, so I am channeling famed rom-com hero Jerry Maguire, because I'm in this class. I'm in one of those like accountability classes where you like do goals and then you have to like reach them. And so I, people hold you accountable and also sort of like help you navigate like how best to proceed. And so I keep, you know, I really like this career path that we've all chosen. It's very fun and exciting. And there's like a certain amount of, gumption I perhaps like don't intrinsically have when I sort of like taking big swings. You know, I prefer for like opportunities to find me. I prefer to just like be quiet and keep my head down and just like, you know, fingies crossed. And so this class is making me sort of like take some bigger swings, some risks, some things like Jerry Maguire. It's like, you know, he has these like career realizations and then he like puts it all out there and is like, I'm doing this. And then he gets like really scared and is like, oh my God, what have I done? And I keep like having these moments where I'm like, yes, this is a great decision. And then I send the email off and then I go, oh my God, what have I done? And that's just like the roller coaster been on. And there's been like so many things like I can't even tell you, just in the last week, where I'm just like, I feel like a pinball thing in a machine where I'm just like just being thrown around into different emotional states. You know, for hopefully like Jerry, you know, hopefully all for the best and to get Cuba the big bucks. So, you know, yeah. So that's who I'm channeling. Katie, who are
you're that casting directors in show me the money. Show me the money.
Check your inboxes. And if that was too forward, I'm sorry.
Already retreating.
Oh God. Katie, who are you channeling?
Oh man, I think I'm having a little bit of a different week than you guys, although my computer just started making the airplane taking off noises, so Allie, maybe you can hook me up with Carson. I don't want to like push
would be
your deal.
Happy to. No, please by all means.
But I just recently moved to a new place, and so I've been like exploring the new neighborhood and I've just been walking and endlessly every day for miles and miles and miles, and Elizabeth Bennet loves a walk.
Yes, she does.
Is she also like my favorite? I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm tailoring my life to be more like hers. So,
but
I would say, like, yeah, I'm channeling Elizabeth Bennet right now. My hem is 6 inches deep in mud. And I also turned down a proposal from my cousin the other day.
Oh,
just kidding.
Was it like a very reasonable, like it would have been a good life choice, but you're holding out?
I mean, all we have in common is potatoes, so I don't know if it would have lasted.
No. Yes.
But mainly the walking
Your
thing.
Enjoyment of excellently boiled potatoes. That's a reference, a very like deep Pride and Prejudice reference for those listeners who are confused.
Yeah. I feel like it's a core part of my life, but yeah, other people might not understand. But Lena, who are you channeling?
Okay. I don't want to be like a downer, but.
Lena. No,
we've already been there. Join me here at rock bottom.
Well, I feel like, you know, my life the last year or so has not felt like a rom-com at all. Couldn't be farther from it. So I was like thinking long and hard and I was like, I guess right now the heroine I'm channeling the most is Renee Zellweger in Bridget Jones' Diary in the beginning, where she's getting drunk in her pajamas listening to All by Myself.
Yes. Lena.
Hopeless about where her life is.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But I bring it up to say that was the beginning of the movie, you know? And then her life starts to pick up. You know, she gets like a good job. She gets to like, I need a better word been slutted up, but she gets to have choices. You know what I mean? She gets to have choices.
Yeah.
And experience real love. So I'm feeling like hopeful that my time is coming soon.
It is.
You're in your act one.
Exactly. And that's a great place to be. And I can't tell you how many weeks I've come into the podcast and say, this week I'm Bridget Jones in act one. And then I climb all the way back up and I'm feeling great. And then I have to come back and say, oops, got drunk last night in my pajamas, Bridget Jones again. I'm back at act one, And that, you know, it's all cyclical.
Yeah. This also is very Amanda from The Holiday, which is another act one, getting drunk, singing The Killers. And then Jude Law knocks on her door. So
fingers crossed.
Knock on that door.
Love an act one.
Fingers crossed.
A sense of British man in your future, Lena.
Oh yes. And okay, this is a deep cut. Speaking of rom-com heroes originally written for a British man, why don't we get into our movie discussion today? We watched the 1995 film While You Were Sleeping, which, side note, what I was referring to is that I read that the writers actually wrote Peter Gallagher's character with Pierce Brosnan in mind.
I can see that.
Me too. Absolutely. And in this classic,
great in a coma.
Oh my gosh. He would look incredible. So I think that's why I think he just like probably wouldn't do it, because he's like, I'm Pierce Brosnan, you know, I'm James Bond, I can't sleep.
I should be conscious. I should be conscious during the film.
Well, in this classic rom-com, lonely transit worker Lucy Eleanor Moderitz, played by Sandra Bullock, saves her longtime crush, Peter, played by Peter Gallagher, from the path of an oncoming train. At the hospital, doctors report that he's in a coma, and a misplaced comment from Lucy causes Peter's family to assume that she is his fiance. When Lucy doesn't correct him, they take her into their home and confidence. Things get even more complicated when she finds herself falling for Peter's brother, Jack, played by the amazing Bill Pullman.
Ooh. The movie was written and directed by Frederick Liebau and Daniel G. Sullivan, and directed by John Turteltaub, who directed rom-com Drive Me Crazy and one of my mother's favorite movies, National Treasure. The film was a critical and commercial success. It grossed over $182 million. That's 10 times its budget, which was $17 million, I think. And Sandra Bullock received a Golden Globe nomination.
Wow.
Didn't win, but for Best Actress in a Comedy or Musical. So, you guys, what are some of our first initial thoughts on this film? Was it any of our first time seeing it? And maybe you guys could walk us through a little bit why you chose this film.
Probably five times. And I've probably seen it three out of the five times in the last year or so.
Oh my gosh.
Which is kind of strange. It just kind of happened by accident. Like, one time it was on TV and I was like, I guess I'll keep watching this, you know? And we also covered this movie on our podcast for the holiday season. I think I avoided this movie for a long time because I like just hearing the premise is so preposterous. Like, she falls in love with a guy in a coma. And you know what? Before I watched the movie the first time, I didn't know that Bill Pullman was part of the movie. Like, I just thought, oh, she falls in love with a guy in a coma and somehow they end up together. Like, I thought they ended up together. So I was like, this movie sounds dumb and unrealistic. So I don't want to see it. But then when they bring the brother in, like, I think it's still a pretty preposterous concept. a lot more like organic, and I really like the chemistry between Sandra Bullock and Bill Pullman. And so I don't know. They kind of like they make it as grounded as possible. So I think it's a great movie. I love it.
I love this movie too, and I've only seen it twice. And I think I thought it was a horror movie for a long time.
Yes. Like,
it's such a creepy title.
It's so creepy. And like, part of me was like, did I just get confused with that Pam Beasley storyline in The Office where she got 2 weeks' notice confused with like 2 weeks later or something
it
like
was
that.
28 days and 28 days later.
Yeah.
That's Sandra Bullock. 28 days is Sandra Bullock.
And like, but like truly while you were sleeping sounds so creepy. And I think I just thought it was a horror movie for a long time. And I do not do horror movies. And or if I do them, I carry that trauma with me forever.
oh my God.
And you know what you did. And so I first saw it 2 years ago or a year and a half ago when we did it for our podcast. And so I think I've only ever watched it in like the height of summer. I guess now it's not the height of summer. It just feels like the height of summer today. And it's a holiday movie, but I do love it. I love Sandra Bullock. She's so just like, she's not over the top charming in this. She's just like a gal living her life. And then like her unrequited crush gets out of hand. And I feel like who doesn't love a story about that?
No, totally.
Yes.
Totally. Allie, had you seen it before?
Yeah, I'd seen it once before. And I, the first time I saw it, I was like what you guys have been saying. I was like, this is so crazy, but why am I loving it? And so this time, instead of me just being like, oh, what a crazy ride, I'm here for it, I tried to think a little bit more critically. And I was like, okay, Allie, why do you like this movie that, you know, honestly has some quite a few problematic parts, and also, you know, there's a lot of unrealistic moments, but why is it good? And I think there are two main reasons why this movie is good. I think the first is the director. I think John Turteltaub came off of like two really funny, directing two funny comedies, and one of them being Cool Runnings. And so I think he brought a lot to this movie in terms of humor, because this movie is very funny, especially the side characters, especially the family, the Gallagher family. And so I think his directing brought a lot to it. And I think Sandra Bullock and Bill Pullman's chemistry brought a lot to it. And like Sandra Bullock, I think they originally offered the part to Julia Roberts, but she was like, I'm already like a fucking A-lister. I'm not going to do this screenplay from two writers who we've never heard of. And this was like the only big movie that they did. And so Sandra got the part, and I think she shines in it. She's so good and like lovable, and her bangs, oh my god.
PC so bangs good. To have PC bangs,
PC bangs,
oh my sweaters. God, the sweater.
Sweaters that you can just swim in,
truly that you I would look insane in. But I did look up sweaters after watching the movie. I need to stop buying sweaters, but I love the sweater.
Oh my gosh. Yes. So I think those are the two things that saved the movie. And I think like the two screenwriters got very, very lucky that really lovely actors and this lovely director got attached to their film, because the writing in this film is insane.
Do you guys want to hear a crazy fact about this movie?
Oh, please.
Yes. Yes. Always.
I mean, maybe you already know this, but apparently the movie was originally written with the gender switch. So it was going to be a woman in the coma and then a man pretending to be her fiance. I'm like, thank God they changed that.
Oh,
that would have been terrible.
Yes.
Predatory.
Yeah.
Yes.
Predatory and horrible.
Terrifying. And I read that I think it was Meg Ryan's production company that they took it to that were like, you need to switch the genders. I think that's what I heard, which we love. Cause the more we do this, the more we find out like our favorite rom-com heroines, like eventually get, their own production companies. Like they eventually like make their own production companies. It's so cool. Like Meg Ryan has one, Drew Barrymore has one. And I just found out, this is a complete tangent, but I did just watch the rape revenge rom-com Promising Young Woman. And yes. I loved it. Trigger warning, but I loved it. And that was produced by Margot Robbie's production company. And I freaking love that this just keeps happening. But yeah, sorry, tangent. But but yes.
Could I just hop on that tangent really quickly?
Please,
I'm so sorry.
Come on in. The water's warm.
here, I'm going to hop in this warm bath of a tangent. So we talk about this on the podcast sometimes where we have these like very talented young actresses who then kind of like Hollywood, you know, after, you know, launching them to star status kind of like tosses them to the side. Like we see it with like Jennifer Lawrence, like mm-hmm. where is she now? I don't know. We see it with Meg Ryan, where Meg Ryan was like, had this like wonderful heyday and now she's like in nothing. Mm-hmm. And it's a tragedy and it's sad mm-hmm. that the way that like these female actresses are kind of treated as disposable.
Yeah.
But this mm-hmm. kind of, but this is like, the production companies are very powerful. Like this is their way to be like, you can't, toss this business can't toss me aside. I will find a new avenue to still tell stories mm-hmm. that are important to me, even if you are too shallow Hollywood to have me be a star in them.
Yes.
So shout out to Proofrock Pictures. That's Meg Ryan's production company. Shout out to them. And I would be happy to be in any of your movies. So.
Yeah, we'd be so happy to be in any of your movies or pitch to any of you.
Subtle plug for myself.
Subtle plug. Okay, so yes. I've seen this movie probably 15 times. But here is the thing.
Wow.
14 of those times were before I had turned 10 years old is what I will say.
Wow. okay, wow.
And maybe I'm exaggerating, but I do know that every time I had to go to my grandpa's house when I was little, I would watch one of two movies, which was the VHS copy of While You Were Sleeping or the movie Willow. So I know I watched.
Oh my yes. God.
Willow. So I know I watched While You Were Sleeping a lot. And when I was a kid, I loved the movie. It was like such, it was stressful. It was intense. I was like so torn between the both brothers who I thought were great options at the time. And so now, you know, that was the 90s, the early aughts. Cut to present day, 2021. I'm watching this movie and holy shit, I was surprised by what I saw. Because it is this, we see that, we talk about this a lot in rom-coms that part of why Allie and I got into this, and we would love to know your guys' experience, is that, you know, I really grew up on rom-coms. Allie sort of had like a rom-com renaissance in her college days. And, but so for me, I had a lot of life expectations set up by rom-coms, mm-hmm. and there was a definite trend. Yeah. Oh yeah. And that's what you guys cover a lot of. And the 90s was a insane time for portrayals of women. So this movie shaped my point of view where I was like, yeah, you know, like finding a husband, it's like confusing and farcical. And you might find yourself in a situation where the man you're in love with is in a coma and you've lied and you can't get out of it, but you like the brother. And I just like watching it, I was like both so enamored because I feel like you don't often get to see like farces a lot. So I really adored the farcical nature of it where it's like one misunderstanding after another, where then it's like Lucy, mm-hmm. by the time we get to like, Lucy, are you pregnant? And she's like jokingly says, yes, it's like, and now we have a pregnant rumor. But what an insane it is as crazy as it sounds. But yes, the performances are totally what grounds it. And the whole time I was watching it, in your defense, Katie, I was like, if they recut the first half of the movie with a different score, it could be so scary. Like oh, it could be the scariest.
Like I saved you from the train and now you're my fiance.
Exactly. And like, yeah, the deep conversations like alone at the hospital. Hi, I'm Lucy. It was like, no, 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 no.
Someone standing in the window listening.
Yes. Oh, but, Saul. But oh my God, Saul. I think the casting definitely did the movie a lot of good. And I love the family. The family casting is so great.
Yeah, the family's so great.
I don't want to get too off topic, but I do want to know what's your guys' history? Like, how did you guys come into rom-coms? But this is taking it so far away from the movie, but I do want to know.
No, but like, we never have like rom-com like lovers on the podcast. We usually have people who are like, haters. Oh yeah, I've seen a rom-com once, and sometimes haters. No, people are always polite. People are always polite.
They're polite, but
but we know that they secretly.
Yeah.
Don't like them. But you got, tell us about your history with rom-coms. I would love, I because me and I have very different stories. And so mm-hmm. we'd be interested in like how you guys got into them exactly. as well.
I mean, I've definitely just like loved rom-coms as a kid. And I think it's the same with me and Katie both have loved rom-coms for a long time, but I'll say like kind of into high school and college, it kind of became uncool to like rom-coms, and I like yes. went to college for film school. So like probably like 4 or 6 years around that time, like my favorite movies were like Amelie and like Wes Anderson movies.
Yes.
And like, yes. and mm-hmm. I love those films. I love those films. But like, I also loved like anytime Clueless is on TV, I'm watching it. I love Clueless so much.
Oh,
and the dialogue is so good. Like, you can't tell me that's not a film with a capital F.
Yes.
Yes.
But yeah, like, I definitely think from just being a kid, so coming full circle, as I've grown older, I've like reconnected to rom-coms and been like, wait a second, I love this genre. I'm not going to.
Yeah,
I reject the assumption that they're not a worthy art form. But on top of it all, I definitely think rom-coms affected how we approached romance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Katie.
yeah.
Just a sense of like, you know, I'm always, maybe my expectations are high for who my romantic partner will be. And then two, kind of I narrativize like the relationships I'm in when I'm in them. And I sort of like mm-hmm. think like, well, we're coming around to the moment where we're going to say we love each other. And then that's going to lead to this. And it's like, Lena, you've based that off of watching seasons of The Bachelor and rom-com movies.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Like, that's not real life necessarily. Things happen a bit differently.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I think Lena and I are similar. Oh, go. Yeah, The Bachelor.
Oh, no, Katie, please go. No, I was just going to say The Bachelor timeline from saying I love you is so, it's so crazy. But I love it. And if you don't say I love you after hometowns, you're done, babe. Yeah, you're done.
Sorry. So, and you got to drop that L-bomb.
Yeah. I love how it goes from like, I'm thinking I might actually be able to fall for this person to, I think I'm falling for you. To I'm falling for you, to I love you. Like, that's the trajectory.
I feel like yes. there has to be like I feel like the producers are like, okay, this is the language that we use like to communicate the different stages.
Like, it's insane. True. I mean, this is but like, you think they would mix up the language a little bit. Like, it's always I'm falling for you, and it's like there are other words falling for you. But I digress. I digress.
We digress. We're so sorry. But Katie, how'd you come to rom-coms?
Well, I'm glad we're having this conversation about our journey with rom-coms, mm-hmm. just to use mm-hmm. the Bachelor vernacular there.
Yeah.
I always loved rom-coms. Like, as a kid, I think I picked up on sort of the like stigma around them pretty early, because I remember as a kid like covering my eyes during a kissing scene and God knows what movie, but I was like, oh my God, it's not cool to enjoy this. But I was like watching through my fingers being like, yes, kiss. So I've always enjoyed them. And I think, you know, when you absorb something and you enjoy it, it does impact your relation to that kind of thing in life. So it does sort of set a certain expectation of what kind of gestures have meaning, what benchmarks you're trying to hit and stuff like that. And also it set a pretty high bar for the kind of comedic moments I expect in a romantic relationship. And they're not always that funny. Can be a little disappointing sometimes. But I think like my love for rom-coms is something where, similar to Lena, it's ebbed and flowed over the years, mostly due to sort of like the perception of rom-coms and like what kind of person enjoys consuming that type of pop culture. And Lena and I have had a lot of discussions about why they're having a resurgence now, why we've sort of reconnected to our love for this particular genre. And I think it just has to do with like their comfort food in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. There's something we grew up with. Yeah. It makes us feel comfortable. Maybe the calm is more about comfort than comedy in some ways. Mm-hmm. And that especially right now when like the world is so uncertain and you have this mm-hmm. wonderful formula where the pitfalls are all comedic in nature, they never get too dark, and you know everything's going to end up okay and you're going to have your romantic dreams fulfilled. It's nice to have that sort of satisfying, predictable story in our lives right now. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that other people are feeling the same way and getting back into rom-coms, and we're seeing a lot more of them being made.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Allie and I have talked about that because I think we both had similar experiences where, I just really connect to that for a while where it almost felt it was highly gendered, right? Where it was like mm-hmm. rom-coms was a pejorative for a period of time. And it was at this time when they were producing like a lot of rom-coms. And so the quality is like, sure, like wasn't across the board the same. So they were like easier to punch down on. And then the marketing was largely for women. And that was like growing up during like the chick flick phase where it's like, mm-hmm. that was a pretty like normal term to say. Yeah. And then now, and then also like noting like what was like, we also talk about sort of like what was wrong with the genre, right? Just in that, like, and I think this is like applicable to so many genres, but like, right, it's like, a very white/segregated genre, very like heteronormative, mm-hmm. like not super inclusive. And we like love the rom-coms that are sort of coming out now. They're telling mm-hmm. different stories, like in a more contemporary way. It's a very exciting time for rom-coms.
Mia, I agree. I feel like rom-coms are definitely kind of having like a renaissance right now. A renaissance. I think thanks to streaming apps like Netflix mm-hmm. and or streaming channels like Netflix and Hulu and whatnot, creating really fun, exciting new rom-coms. I watching to take all of these wonderful thoughts and like circle them back around to while you're sleeping there. Watching this movie, I was definitely like, oh, I really like Bill, like Pullman's character. I find myself falling into this trap where it's like, oh, this is such a rom-com thing where it's like the expectation of like, yeah, in 1 week, a guy will like be like, know exactly who you are after a week. You'll fall in love after a week. And like, he'll be able to like nail down like your problem and how you can fix it. Like, you were always planning these vacations, Lucy, but you never go on any.
What about you, like, Bill Pullman? You don't want to work for your father's furniture company. And it's like, well, there it is. Those are the two problems.
We know each other's deal after talking to each other for three days, maybe just 3 hours.
That's like my favorite trope I haven't heard for a while, which is the like, you know what your problem is? Here it is succinctly.
And you're not that complex.
Fixable.
You have one flaw.
Easy to solve problem. Yeah.
This is the only thing keeping you from true happiness.
Oh,
you don't go on vacation enough. That's your problem.
Very actionable.
But like for the same reason why, like, you know, it's a little bit toxic, you know, like, oh God, you know, people aren't like that. People aren't that simple and problems aren't that easy to fix. It's also so delicious where it's like, what if that was my problem? That like,
if only it was, I need to travel more.
I need to travel more. Like that's what I need to fix about myself. I'm taking a little bit of left turn, but I loved about this movie, and it gave me that very like comforting feeling that we were talking about how we turn to rom-coms for comfort, this movie takes place in Chicago during Christmas. Mm-hmm. I'm from Chicago.
Yeah.
And like for me watching this movie, like all of the Gallagher scenes were filmed in this in LaGrange, Illinois, which is kind of like close to where I grew up. And so it's like, oh my gosh, I feel like for me watching this movie, I about Christmas in Chicago in the 90s was like, oh my God, I'm like back. I'm like back in warm my childhood Christmases. Yeah. And I was just like, oh my God, I just, it was so, because I had like a bit of a tough day yesterday, a bit of a theme in my life recently. I had a bit of a tough day yesterday and like watching this movie in all of its craziness and all of its flaws, like I felt that comfort and like in the simple, in like the formula. But it was also beautiful. It was beautiful and lovely and made me miss home. But yeah. That was my two cents.
I think so much about this movie that makes it comforting is that, like, you're not just with what's her name, Sandra. What's her character's name?
Lucy.
You're not just with Lucy on her like journey to find love. You're with her finding a family.
Yeah,
And that family's so like loud and warm and just like constantly, I don't know, like active when they have her over for Christmas. It's just like you're instantly in love with the family and you want to be part of the family, and it's very comforting for that reason.
That dinner table scene where they're just like talking and the mom just keeps going, "These mashed potatoes are so creamy." And she just like repeats that line three times, like, "These mashed potatoes are so creamy." I mean, that's like something that like my mom would say. And like Lucy just like laughing and like being present in it all is just like, oh my gosh, so cozy. What a cozy family and dinner.
I mean, their house. So it's like, I don't think it's a house I've ever been to, but it is like what I always imagine like the quintessential family home is, you know, like I don't, and it, even though it's like, I live in like, I'm from like the suburbs of Portland, Oregon, where the houses are very nice and fine, but they're just not like that, you know? So I'm just like, I don't know. It's so idyllic.
It feels like Home Alone too, which also is in Chicago. I'm just realizing.
That was filmed in my town, Winnetka.
Oh my God.
Shout out to Winnetka, Illinois, guys.
Wait, you guys, did Illinois have some tax credit situation in the 90s? Because we all of like my references as a West Coast gal are like Midwest home. So I am like, wait, what was going on in Illinois in the 90s that all these movies were shot there?
I'm sure there was like a great tax break for like film in Chicago, but I know that John Hughes, who filmed a lot of those like teen rom-coms, is like grew up in Illinois, so that's why he wanted to go back there for like filming and stuff like that. Yeah,
cute.
That's why it feels so cozy. Thanks, John.
Thanks, John. Yeah, and that's why. Yeah, even for people that are not from Illinois, it's like we all connect to it because so many films are from Illinois. Can I just say the most shocking moment to me was when the movie started out, when I was like, "Okay, Mia, okay, child, Mia, we're not in Kansas anymore. This looks different in the light of day in 2021." Is when she's talking to her landlord at the very beginning of the movie. She's wearing that beautiful large sweater, and she says, "Oh my gosh, I almost forgot." And then pulls a sweater out of her sleeve that has, I guess, presumably she's been balancing her arm horizontally to stop the present from falling out. And then she forgets that the present is hidden in her large sleeve and pulls it out. And I said, "Okay, hold on to your hats. This is gonna be a wild ride."
You know what? You know what? My hat holding moment was in this movie, where I was like, "Whoa, Allie, hold on to your hat because it's gonna fall off. It's so crazy." Is when Bill Pullman's character in front of the family in the hospital. Says like Lucy has been cheating on Peter with her neighbor, and she's like, "I know what I can say to prove the fact that I haven't been cheating on Peter. He has one testicle." And it's like,
my God,
that logic is wrong. How does that prove? It proves that you've had sex with Peter, but not that you're not cheating on him. Wild.
I mean, I couldn't tell you how shocking it is to go from being a child and being like, "That makes sense," to then being adult and saying, "Wait a minute, I don't even know how she got that he only has one testicle from that conversation with that man."
I know. yeah.
Yeah.
If I may throw my hat into the hat holding on to ring.
please.
My moment was when they said the full name. The dad said the full name of Ashley Bartlett Bacon. And then they had a whole bit of her being named after breakfast foods and not being down to earth enough. And I was like, what? is this like a real name of a real person? And they were like, we gotta fit it in. It's personal against Ashley Bartlett Bacon.
There are like elements of the script that are so wild that it's like, yeah, where it's like the movie is like almost pulling it off. And then those little moments where it's like, wait, what is happening? Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Like, I'm going along with it. I'm going along with this. This makes sense. Wait, is this woman accepting a proposal in a voicemail?
Remember
Ashley Bartlett Bacon or whatever? Oh. She like calls Peter's voicemail and she's like, I've been thinking it over and I will marry you. Yeah. And in a voicemail?
You're not going to say, hey, I have something really important to tell you. Will you please call me back?
Yes.
Concerning our proposal.
Also,
that's the in-person combo.
Yes.
How did they decide on Lisbon too? Like a famous city, but not like it just feels random at this point.
It did feel so random. It felt so random.
If I may throw my crazy hat into the ring.
Oh, please head on in.
And skip to the end if you guys are cool with it.
Oh, we're ready. Absolutely.
Okay. I am actually very upset that they get engaged at the end. I find it very unreasonable. I'm like,
her and Jack.
Yeah. I'm like, Jack. Well, also the fact that they go to the altar to get married with Peter is crazy too. But
oh my God.
The fact that like she reveals her secret to everyone and we're like, we're basically left with the question, like, will Jack forgive her and give her a chance? And instead of like giving us a scene of him forgiving her and like them deciding to like give it a real try, it's, hey, will you marry me? And then they're going to make out for the first time in front of his family.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, absolutely. Yes. I think we'd all like to throw our hats in there. And again, I think child Mia is going, what? I thought... the expectation this movie specifically gave me for the marriage situation where it's like, you're getting caught up in all these marriage webs. And then I felt the same way where I thought it was like, I think that's interesting about this movie is I'm constantly filled with contradictory emotions where it's like when the engagement ring goes into the token thing, I'm like, that's so cute. And then it's him and his whole family. And then I go, wait, what is happening?
Why is his family there?
Yeah. What? Like, and also I felt like nobody really held her accountable for how she behaved.
But it's also partly Saul's fault, you know? Like, he made it snowball.
Yes.
So it's like,
it's that nurse's fault. Let's be real.
It's her
okay.
Wanda, what was her name?
That feels right. And Allie, go ahead.
Well, I just have a crazy fact about that nurse. Can I say it real quick?
Please.
The crazy fun fact about that nurse is that's John Travolta's sister.
Oh, what?
What?
Yes.
They look nothing alike.
They don't
let me double check that. Well, I said that very confidently, and I'm like, that can't be right. Well, where did I read that? Wait, I was tired.
While you're,
John Turtletaub's sister, and you just misread it.
That feels right. And while you're researching it, let me just also like put a quick note in. With the Travolta family is just so ingrained in the rom-com world. Also, because we didn't get to talk about this, our last episode was Jerry Maguire, but I had no idea. So John Travolta's wife, Kelly Preston, who was also in quite a few rom-coms, passed away last year, and I had no idea. Mm-hmm. And she's so talented.
I was right. It is John Travolta's sister.
Wow. That's cool.
Wild. I wonder if she's a Scientologist too, just because I wonder. I'm just curious how that works with siblings and that situation.
If it's not, they're probably estranged.
Exactly. Yeah. She's probably.
We should call her.
We should call her. We should offer her some time. Anyways, I love, again, the expectation that if you accidentally say you're... Okay, first of all, this movie also set this expectation that in hospitals, you are not allowed to see someone if you are not family. And that is like a big emotional thing that you're, the general practitioner doctor is very passionate about. Mm-hmm. In general, representations of doctors, it's like, I have never met a doctor who expressed like any amount of like personal opinion or emotion on anything. But yeah. While I was seeing them. So it was just very, I was like, okay, doctors are very upset. It's only family. You have to lie to get into the room. And then once the lie is there, you can't undo it. And I think the movie almost does a good job of making it like you have to do it. Like they were like, yes, the grandma will have a heart attack. And it's like, okay, I'm kind of there. But then by the end with Saul, when they like double down, then I'm like, oh, I just would have wanted a slightly stronger reason. For maintaining the lie. But it worked. It was enough. I mean, child Mia was like, she has to do it.
Of course.
There was no other option.
Now, the only reason why I want to move on to rom-com tropes, the next segment of our podcast, a little bit sooner rather than later is because there are a lot of rom-com tropes in this movie. So many. So I want to just create space to say, if you guys have any final thoughts about While You Were Sleeping before we jump into counting up all those tropes, to lay them on the floor now next to the hats.
Tally those tropes.
Heck yes. Mia, shall I start us off with the trope?
Yes, please. I will tally.
Thank you so much. Okay, so I have this movie starts off with an city montage of Chicago we're just seeing a lot of that beautiful skyline shots and busy streets. Oh man, seeing shots of the L fucks me up. I miss Chicago. I have It's Christmas Time.
Yes.
This movie takes place during Christmas time. This movie has a childhood flashback.
Absolutely.
This movie has opening narration.
Yes.
Within the first 4 minutes of the movie, four major rom-com tropes are hit. insane. This movie's packed. I know I missed so many, but I'll keep going. Our main heroine is klutzy. She slips on a rope while she's she's pulling a tree. Who pulls a tree through a window? That scene was confusing to me. But I was like, okay, weird, quirky. Lucy's very klutzy. Lucy has dead parents. Mm-hmm. Dead
classic.
Parents.
Classic.
All the parents are. Easy way to make a character complex, kill their parents. She has a meet cute with Peter where she saves his life. And then you guys, this rom-com has one of my favorite tropes of all time, which is the other brother trope, where our rom-com heroine falls in love with the other brother. And so we see it in The Family Stone, another Christmas movie about a crazy family, a classic Christmas rom-com. I love the other brother trope. So insane.
so inappropriate.
Happens to me. I hope it never happens to me, but also kind of hope it happens to me. I have that Jack has a quirky job. He's an estate furniture sales or like acquirer where he like gets dead people's furniture and has like a quirky truck, quirky mode of transportation. He has a battered old truck. I have the perfect sexy circumstance. His truck, it gets blocked in. So he has to walk Lucy home. Oh, no.
Oops.
And like it's kind of like a double perfect sexy circumstance, which is like, oh, we're slipping on ice and we have to clutch each other closely to remain standing.
I love that scene. Oh my god!
I have I just have coma written as a rom-com trope.
Yeah, this is a coma rom-com. Yeah,
it's a coma rom-com. The other ones are Big Sick is a coma rom-com. Mm-hmm. There's that Mark Ruffalo.
Strangers,
just like heaven.
Yeah,
just like heaven. Which is like another coma rom-com. And then there are like a lot of like coma rom drums, but we're not gonna count those. But yeah, so we have like characters in a coma and you're getting to know like them while they're in a coma, which is through their family and stuff. Should I keep going? I have more. I feel like I've been talking for a while. Should I keep going?
Yeah, keep going. Yeah. I know there's so many. And I feel like I still have some on my bingo card. So we'll see.
I have support. Okay. Coworkers obsessed with your love life.
Yes.
Her boss is obsessed with her love life. I have a supportive black best friend. This is a trope we don't like, but is very present, prevalent, especially in 90s rom-com. Yes. But like, she has like her friend who's like a fellow token taker who, do we hear her first
name?
She
has like three lines. Her name's Celeste.
Celeste, who is literally only there to be like, oh, you're engaged? And just like asking her about her love life. I have two characters. This is like a Christmas rom-com specific, but there's Mistletoe, two characters who, you know, don't want to kiss or forced to kiss.
I just want to say that
my family would never encourage me to kiss my sister's husband.
Seriously.
That would be crazy.
So weird.
So they were like insistent. They're like, it's tradition. And it's like, oh God. I have ends in a wedding.
Yes.
Yeah. I have I object scene where someone says I object in the wedding. I have one dimensional ex with Ashley Benson Bacon, Bartlett Bacon. And then I have the title of the rom-com is said. It's the last line. And then this one, which I want to introduce a new trope, which we haven't introduced yet, which is you're at a party, a loud party, and the music and the people suddenly go silent. And that's right when you say something super embarrassing.
Yes.
That happens in one of my favorite rom-coms, 10 Things I Hate About You, where Heath Ledger goes, like, you look really sexy in that dress or something like that. And then the concert goes silent and everyone hears what he screams and it's like, oh, awkward.
Yes. Oh, my God. I'm smiling just thinking about that scene. Oh, sorry. Side note. Today is the anniversary that movie came out. Like over 20 years ago. I didn't see how long.
20 years ago?
Over 20 years. It's been more than
20 years. Over 20 years? Oh, my God. I'm ancient.
I think it's 22. So upsetting.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
So upsetting. I love that movie so much.
That's one of my top watched, like, of all time.
Same. Yes. It is. I love
the
that movie.
The when they go paintballing and then make out is like my dream day.
It's so great. And it's like, I'm afraid of paintballing, so I love that it's paint ballooning. I'm like, yes, yeah, so that I will get on board for.
That's painful.
Yes.
But that's that's my first pass. Mia, did I miss any?
Oh, absolutely. Okay, great. So I have sort of a significant age gap with the male lead being older. So there's a 9-year age difference between Sandra Bullock and Peter Gallagher, which is, you know, neither here nor there, but there it is. That happens a lot. We're showing you the baby photos. No one I've ever dated's parents has ever shown me the baby photos. I mean, I guess I think the person chose me their baby photos, but there's always like the embarrassing. Stalking is sexy. Lucy is just full on like being a psycho, and like it's cute and funny. The big speech at the end to the family. Big speech revealing all. You did get the dead parent trope. Tropes we do not like that occur is that this movie is overwhelmingly white and very heteronormative. And then What about this? Tell me if you think I'm wrong. Okay, is this just a movie trope, or is this from the genre if that people sing "Auld Lang Syne" on New Year's? Mm. I've just never been anywhere where anyone has ever sang that song at New Year's. Nobody. I'm not even sure how to spell it.
Yeah, I don't even know if that's like, was that like a generational thing? Because I feel like I only see that in movies pre-2000.
Maybe, you know? That's it. Maybe that's it. And I'm just being like a young, you know, a young, I mean, not to refer to myself as young. I'm being like what the TikTok teens are to us now. You know, I'm like, oh, okay. Well, okay. I'm not going to count it because you know, it's the jury's out. The jury's out. But those were mine. Katie and Lena, did we, Azor, is there anything that slipped through our fingies there?
I'm not really like, I don't think you guys missed any. That feels, I do, one thing that I like miss in this movie, but I think they did it deliberately, is there's no quirky best friend, which I found surprising the first time I watched it. But the whole premise is that she's so lonely, you know, only the loneliest person would do this and go along with this. So I understand why she's missing the quirky best friend.
Yeah.
But yeah,
she has like that, like that quirky neighbor who like hits on her and like
Joe Jr.
I mean like harasser.
Yeah. He's almost like
a trope. It's like the douchebag guy that's in love with the lead that she keeps rejecting. I feel like we see that in like a lot of movies.
Wedding Planner
is the only one I can think of.
Yes.
Massimo.
No, it's there. Yeah. Massimo, Wedding Planner. Usually neighbor. You know, they mention it in Bridesmaids. It's not seen, but Maya Rudolph has a neighbor who keeps asking Kristen Wiig to watch the news with him.
Oh, one other thing I thought of is that they have the trope of the like city scene cutaways of like someone delivering a newspaper and then slipping on the ice. There's like, there's only like two of them. It's not even enough.
I'd say there's three.
Okay. It's like a half-hearted attempt at the trope of just like, there's other people living in the city.
And they all fall on the ice.
Dude, and can I say that now that I got a dog during quarantine, now that I have a dog, I am so aware that whenever we cut to the suburban neighborhood, they constantly have a dog barking in the background. And I am like, this has got to stop. This has got to, because now I'm watching so many rom-coms with my dog. Oh, here he goes. Well, I'm going to let my dog outside really quick.
Yes, she is also a crazy cat lady.
Oh,
not a crazy cat lady. Yes. But she did her Oreo in the milk.
Yeah, that was unnecessary.
Also, just like a little PSA, don't give your cats milk. It gives them diarrhea. It's not good for them, right? Oh. Am I right?
Yeah, I think that's like an overused thing we see in film and like cartoons. It's like, give a cat milk. Mm-hmm. And it's like, not necessarily the best for the digestive system.
If I had water, a cat, it would only be getting almond milk. Nothing but the best for my invisible cat.
Unsweetened almond breeze milk. Yes. Oh, wait, are we talking about the milk scene?
Yes.
When she dips it in the cat's food?
Yeah.
I hate that so much.
Just on the subject of things that kind of gross us out, I am so hypersensitive to things in a post-COVID world where it's like touching things unnecessarily. Like,
oh my God, yes.
Sandra Bullock had her hands all over like public banisters and like the walls and counters of the hospital. And I was like, oh my God, hand sanitizer, gloves, wash your hands.
It's going to take us so long to come back from that if we ever do emotionally, because same thing, this is neither here nor there. I was watching the movie Speed today, and Sandra Bullock is on a public bus with her touching things with her hands, and then to get away from a creepy passenger, she takes the gum out of her mouth and is like stretching it and like touching it, and I was like, no. Also, before, oh no, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that gave me a shudder worse than every time a token came through the little porthole and she would touch it. And I was like, ah!
It's so funny. I mean, I know we all feel this, but like so occasionally, like when I see people do things in movies now and I'm like, without a mask? I'm like, wait, what? I get like my brain gets confused. Like
so many people at that party.
Yes. Oh my gosh, we're broken now.
We're broken.
Before we move on to reality check, and I reveal, actually, no. Okay, I'll reveal how many tropes we had.
Yes,
27. Okay, so it's 27 tropes. Very high. And before we move on to our next segment, I just want to include a fun fact here. There is a wild Vulture article where somebody interviews Peter Gallagher about this movie. And he apparently was asleep, like for a lot, like literally asleep. Like he apparently is very good at falling asleep places. And it like bothers his wife. He's so good at it. So he just like literally slept during filming. And they would wake him up.
Pierce Brosnan could not have done that.
No, he couldn't have. And that's why they needed Peter Gallagher.
Peter Gallagher's so good at sleeping.
Oh my gosh. The most restful job he's ever had.
All right, you guys, it is time to rate this rom-com. We've counted the tropes. And as of now, here are the top five rom-coms we have here on PS I Love Rom-Coms. We have When Harry Met Sally, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, The Best Man, Never Been Kissed, and Love and Basketball. Now, if we so choose today, we can put While You Were Sleeping on our top five list. But we have to unanimously agree to vote off one of those other top five to replace it with. So what do we think? Does While You Were Sleeping deserve a spot on the top five list? And if so, who should it knock off?
I like While You Were Sleeping a lot, but I feel like it's more of a top tenner than a fiver to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes. Yeah. And I agree, because I'm also looking at this and we already have like one movie on here that where someone is like carrying out a big lie, mm-hmm. and that's Never Been Kissed. And I do think Never Been Kissed is ultimately a more satisfying rom-com.
I think what, like, While You Were Sleeping is so fun and crazy and fun and crazy. But I think, like we're saying, like, nothing like this would ever happen in real life.
if someone in real life revealed that they'd done this, I would feel so unsafe. I would feel so unsafe. So afraid.
This movie is a farce, and I think that's why it's so fun. But it's not, is it a realistic depiction of romance, or even close to a realistic depiction of romance? No, but it is very funny and very fun. But I think it's a great farce, but maybe not, I don't think it's revealing anything about love or relationships versus I think the other five movies that we have like are saying something about love and falling in love and the challenges with it more so.
Yeah, agreed.
Oh my gosh.
So I think that's a unanimous no. It does not make it onto the top five, but we love While You're Sleeping, and it's definitely in our top five coma rom-com.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Easily.
Don't sleep on it.
No.
Thank you.
Bye.
And with that territory covered, it's time for our final segment, Reality Check. In this segment, we test out the tropes and plot devices in the rom-coms we've just watched and see if they hold up in the real world. Now, in this film, we see the trope of loudly saying something embarrassing during a sudden moment of quietness at a party, a classic rom-com bit. But has this ever happened to any of us in real life where the music suddenly cuts out and an embarrassing truth comes out?
I mean, I have something that's like kind of like this where it's like, oh, a big personal secret revealed, and I didn't realize it was happening. So embarrassing in front of a group of people. But it was like I was on a set for a film that I was filming, and I did not realize that my mic was on and that people were list, like the director, there are two directors, so both directors were listening. The sound guy was listening. Anybody in like the video village was listening. Where I was in the bathroom, I was and loudly exclaiming, "Oh my god, fuck!" And I was like, "God, I'm fucking bleeding so much." And I was like talking about my period.
Oh my
very
god.
Loudly, very graphically. And then I like came out of the bathroom and I was talking to my friend. I was like, "Oh my god, I just got my period. I think I got it on my costume. Oh my god." And everybody got to hear that. And then everybody, but you know, we all laughed. We're like, "Ha ha ha. That Allie, so quirky, always menstruating." Yes.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's happened to me before. Oh my gosh. Always be careful what you're saying, especially in bathrooms. Never talk in bathrooms about people.
No.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah. Oh my god.
That is incredible, Allie. I'm so sorry that happened, but glad it happened because it's very funny. But I know the horrors of that as well. Katie, Lena, anything, any record skip moments reveal a truth?
I don't think I have one where I accidentally let a truth out, but just like as far as tropes in the movie go that I have lived in my life, when I got my appendix removed like 10 years ago, I had to spend the night in the hospital, and I like had the surgery, and I woke up in my hospital room from my anesthesia, and I had just started dating someone, and he was there in my room waiting for me to wake up. And so I really related to Peter Gallagher in this movie. As far as like you wake up and you're expecting to like see your loving family there or whatever, and there was like this guy that I had just started to get to know, like watching me sleep, and I was like, no, because they wouldn't even let my friend come in with me because it was during the bird flu epidemic.
H1N1.
Yes. Lighter days, you know, I miss that one. I was like expecting my friend to be there, but no, it was like the guy I had just started dating, and it didn't last too long after that. Not because he was there watching me sleep. Yeah.
It was very sweet. Probably not where it's like, I don't like, this is not how I want you to see me. Like, yeah. No. We're just getting to know each other. I am, you know, very drugged and like, oh gosh, I would be like, come back when I'm not induced. not induced, but drugged, but yeah. Oh my gosh, that's so crazy. Were you like, who are you? Or were you like, I know who this is.
I remember just, I think like under my breath, I was like, oh no. And I was like trying to see him, but I was just so like, I feel terrible. I'm wearing a gown that has no back to it. Like, I was just very aware of like my butt and how open to the world it was. So that poor guy was probably like, I've made a horrible mistake by coming here. She's clearly uncomfortable. But Peter Gallagher, I feel you.
My God. Incredible. Lena, have you ever had the waking up and
waking up in a hospital?
Here's your crush.
Yeah, Lena, have you ever been in a coma?
You know, unfortunately, no. I guess I haven't been living enough. I couldn't think of any like very specific things that have happened to me from this movie. I mean,
it makes sense. This movie's insane.
Yeah. I will say, I love the like moment where Jack does the whole leaning thing with Lucy. And I was like, I would like, you know, once we're like out and gathering, I would love someone to lean towards me.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd be happy about that. That'd be a nice moment.
We're all so deprived of physical touch. That would be nice. That would be a nice realization of the trope in the world from this film. I have had many record skip moments. I don't know if it's the volume of my voice. I thought it was for a long time. There's been so many times where I've said something that I thought nobody could hear. And then my voice just carried above everything else that was happening, to the point where in college, I used to, if I had something negative to say, I would say it in a low tone. I would be like, okay, I'll say it. But I've just say it quietly and like in more of a baritone like this. And, the worst is like, okay, so I just have a tick where I don't know if you guys like have a phrase or something that you convulsively say, like if something shocking happens or bad happens. And mine is like a South Park thing that I don't know when it became melded into my psyche, but I will completely out of my control. If something like sudden happens, I will say fuck shit balls very quickly and completely inadvertently. So there was this one time when, in high school, my show choir team was on a trolley photo shoot.
And so and high school.
I hate everything I'm saying. And we went through a tunnel and it all went dark. And everyone was like doing crazy things while it went dark. And like somebody grabbed me and like right as we come into the light, as everyone's being loud, everybody gets quiet and it gets light right in time for me to shout fuck shit balls in front of everybody. And it was like my new boyfriend's mom was there to take photos. And it was just, I was embarrassed. And she was just like, can't explain it. Trolley. They stopped the trolley. They made me get off. but yeah, it does happen. It does. Yeah. Especially for us loud people, you gotta check your volume. Well, I would say that even though this movie is insane, some of the tropes do check out. So I would say reality does check out here. Being overheard by groups of people saying something you wish you didn't does really happen. It's settled. But you guys, that's the podcast. Thank you so much, Katie and Lena, for coming on today. Such a treat to have rom-com experts join us.
Thanks for having us.
Oh my gosh, anytime. Do you two have any social media things to promote or important romance advice for our listeners? Ooh.
Well, you can listen to our podcast, The Rom-Com Effect, on Spotify, Apple Podcast, all your podcast platforms. And if you want to follow us on Instagram or Twitter, we're at Rom-Com Effect. So you can follow us on there.
Amazing. And any romance advice for our listeners?
Katie, do you have anything? I'm still searching.
I just say follow your heart and have fun and don't try to force it into being a rom-com. Be your own leading lady or man.
I love that.
Yeah. Like in the words of, what's his name in The Holiday, you're acting like a side character. You need to live your life like the leading lady that you are.
Yes. That is one of my favorite lines of all time in a rom-com. It's the best.
She had gumption.
Guys.
She had gumption.
She did.
And we all do.
She had gumption. And we all do. And sure, it's stressful for me when I have it, but it is, you know, that growing is hard.
It's hard. You guys, thank you for that romance advice. And to our audience, thank you for listening to the podcast. We have a new episode out every week. And remember to subscribe and rate. And we are brought to you by Campfire Media.
Oh, and P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
Hello. My name is Muriel, and I love true crime.
I'm Nick, and I am not a fan.
Every week on our new podcast, Muriel's Murders, I handpick a real-life crime story that I think will blow Nick's mind.
Muriel is really enthusiastic about researching and telling me these stories, and boy, they are a lot.
Some of them are famous. Some of them are weirdly under the radar, but all of them contain crime, violence, and murder from across history and around the globe.
So join us every Wednesday wherever you get your podcasts, and check out the original Muriel's Murders animations on Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, and TikTok at Muriel's Murders.
How are you feeling, Nikki?
Very nervous.
Are you ready to hear a story?
No.
Too bad. Here comes some murdery clips from season one of Muriel's Murders. This week involves a trio of scheming brothers, a handyman and his gold, an unsolved mystery, and Abraham Lincoln himself. And they also say that Henry actually never recanted his story, ever.
Whoa.
He never recanted it.
You said I shouldn't be scared. This Fisher, that could be a ghost.
And no one knows what happened to Fisher. Like, that never came into the light. Like, Henry never recanted, and Fisher, like, literally never said anything about it.
So very easily, they could have taken him to the thicket. I love that it happened in the thicket, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure what it is, but I just see, like, blackberry brambles, and it's, like, sticky and hurdy. And then they try to kill him. They think they kill him. They move him to the pond, and then he just wakes up. Like, they were really bad at killing and robbing him.
Who pulled somebody over who had some weed.
Yeah.
And the people were like, don't give us a ticket. We'll show you where the weed is at. And he said, okay. And they drove to Texas, and he got about 300 pounds of weed in Texas and drove it back to sell it in Arkansas and totally got caught. But he's like a state trooper from that area, you know?
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah, I get it.
So, like, you got to get this idea that, like, you know.
I'm envisioning rural, sparsely populated.
And it's a little, still has that bootlegger, like, anything goes vibe, you know, like, that's the feeling that I got. You know, the state trooper's like, you got that weed? He's like, no, listen, man, I'll just cut you a deal. He's like, you got it.
We have to go all the way to Texas. He's like, I was going there anyways.
Exactly. He gets there and he buys a gun and bullets, right? So, very concerned father. Doesn't know where his little girl is. Yeah. She's walking through the woods. So, he's just going to go kill this guy.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, totally. So, he goes and he buys a gun and some bullets. And he, like, goes down to Waldport, which is the closest town to where the ferry is to get across the bay. And he gets to where the ferry is. And he looks up and he misses the ferry by, like, just a couple minutes.
Right.
But he looks up and he sees this bearded tiny guy surrounded by these bathrobed women. And so he just picks up his pistol and he shoots it. And the gun misfires 5 times. And so now Creffield has witnesses to that he can't be killed.
Oh, yes.
He just destroyed San Francisco, yes. And now he can't be killed.
Right.
And so they just, like, he didn't duck or run away, and then the ferry just moves across the water.
Just keeping eye contact the entire way.
Muriel's Murders!
Campfire.